I know you have people all the time paying out of their own pocket for classes. I have people pay out of their own pocket for my classes. And you can't always rely on your agency if you want to be great.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today we have this Bauer Brown, friend of mine. He owns a company or co-owns a company called ACIT. It's Advanced Criminal Enforcement Interdiction Tactics. And I always think it's a good idea to have somebody on the podcast that has experience, is a significant member of the interdiction, quote unquote, community. And when I say that word interdiction, it's so funny because I used to call it interception. If you have such a problem with interdiction, let's just call it interception. You're intercepting crime on the highways. But Bauer's also going to be one of the keynote speakers at our conference coming up in Nashville. So if you listen to this after April 23rd or 28th of 2023, that conference has concluded. It was amazing. And Bauer did a good job knowing that he's showing up with the big dogs. I'm just kidding. I'm joking around, dude. I know you do a nice job. But anyway, without any further ado, Bauer Brown from ACIT.
Thanks, man. Happy to be here. Really appreciate this opportunity, man. I've seen you reach out to a lot of companies and helping them out lately. And it says a lot about you and, you know, your vision with this whole, just, you know, what you've done with street cops. You never see yourself bigger or better than anybody else. And you're always trying to help people out, man. It's truly is a great opportunity just to be on the podcast and speak at the conference. So I'm pumped. I'm really excited. And thank you.
Well, dude, I acknowledge that you see that, notice that, and I appreciate that, but it's generally just my nature. What I will say also is it's so funny when you're nice to people and like you're saying like, hey, let me help you with this. Let me help you with that. And they're just like, what's the catch? There is no catch.
Yeah.
I just don't like, it's all part of the deal of like doing something better for everybody else. And especially when I see somebody who has potential to help this thing better, make this thing better. Certainly. I want to, and dude, we know each other. We've met a couple times in person. I appreciate when somebody is on the same path of making things better, making sure cops do things more safely and stopping more crime on our roadways and in general. So I'm honored to have you on, dude, to be honest with you.
Yeah, thank you.
So, dude, tell us about you, the history of you, where you're at now. If you can't speak of your agency, I understand that. But tell us about how long you've been on the job, that whole nine, and when you started getting into interdiction.
Sure. So I've been on the job now for 10 years. I started to get into interdiction, and I started in 2013, and they sent me to my first agency, small agency in Arizona. I'm talking like seven total officers, including chief of police, and a very small agency. They sent me to interdiction school and an interdiction class. I didn't even know what I was going to. They knew I was interested in being more proactive on the proactive side. So they sent me to this training, and I was mind blown at this training. I had always known people would get, you know, major amounts of drugs on the interstate, but I didn't really realize that there was a process to it. You know, I thought they would show up, run their dog, get dope. I didn't realize there was a process. So when I came back from this training, I started implementing it right away. And I have this two lane that I used to work here in Arizona, my old agency, 191. It's a two lane that comes right up from Douglas, which is on the border of Arizona and Mexico. and it runs northbound. So I started to work in that as soon as I got back from this training, and I started to fall in success. And I use that term because one training class wasn't good enough. It was simply kind of showed me what to do. And I tried it. I failed a lot and I fell into some success. I don't know how those cases didn't get thrown out of court. I started to fall into a little bit of success here and there. And this 191 road went right by the sheriff's office county yard. Now I worked for the PD, but it went right by the sheriff's office county yard. And the chief deputy would continuously go to this county yard and he would see me out there, this small little PD officer working interdiction as hard as I possibly could. I mean, I was obsessed with it. I wouldn't go to lunch. I'd eat my lunch on 191 because I was nervous because it's a small road and I was nervous I was going to miss a car if it went by. And the sheriff saw me doing this time after time after time, the chief deputy, the undersheriff. And he called me up one day and said, "Hey, you like interdiction?" I said, "Yeah, I do." He said, "I've got a spot open for you if you want it. You get a canine. You won't have to work any holidays if you don't want to. You pick your own schedule. All I want you to do is go out there and get drugs. And that's all I need you to do. Are you interested?" And I accepted the job immediately. I was like, "Absolutely. Yeah, let's do this." And I didn't even ask how much I got paid. So my wife came home from work and she's like, "Hey," or I told her, I said, "Hey, I just took a job with the county as a canine officer." And she's like, "That's great. I'm really happy for you. How much more are we getting paid?" And I was like, I think it's like $5,000 more than what I'm getting paid now annually. And she's like, "Okay, cool." So I snuck off and I called the chief deputy again. I'm like, "Hey, we didn't discuss pay." And he told me, and it was actually $5,000 less than what I was making. Oh, so wow. I was like, "What do I do here? Do I go back and tell my wife or what do I do?" So I just worked a whole bunch of overtime and she never noticed the difference. So
I love it. Does she know that to this day?
Yeah, she knows that. I've told that story a couple of times, so she knows it. But yeah, I just worked a lot of overtime. Luckily, our sheriff's department that I work for now, that's who I currently work for still. Very, very pro interdiction, proactive anything. They support it so well. I'm so lucky because I hear these horror stories on your podcast and on the groups about these guys working for agencies that, you know, just absolutely condone the proactivity, and it just blows my mind.
I'm going to step back for a second. It's condemn proactivity.
Condemn. Yeah. Just, it blows my mind that the agencies are that way. And I'm fortunate enough to work for a very good agency that supports it.
Well, when you have people who are in charge who have never been cops before in their lives, they don't understand or don't care. They just don't give a shit. They don't want to hear it. And in their mind, they think more traffic stops equals more problems. And the reality is less traffic stops equals more problems. It's a simple explanation is that you could really even chalk it up to this. Everybody knows where they live or where they grew up. That one agency that where if you drove through their town, you would get pulled over. They were just right. Known as like, "You're going to get stopped there, da, 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 da." So what did people do? They avoided it. So if you are serving your townspeople, your city residents appropriately, you would be encouraging traffic stops, knowing. And on top of that, not only does the bad guys see this, but the public sees this and has more confidence in their law enforcement, saying, "We like living here because we know these guys and girls at this police agency are stopping a lot of cars, and it seems like they're certainly out there doing the work." But you know, you get these people who are in charge, quote unquote, and managers, not leaders. And they try to shut this shit down. And it's embarrassing. And honestly, they have no place in law enforcement. This is my personal opinion. And I think it's a pretty factual opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And those are the type of people that are trying to give these guys advice too. You know, I when I started working for this PD, I had asked the question of, I wasn't familiar. I was brand new. And I'd asked the question, "Hey, if I stop a vehicle and I get to the point where I'm going to tow this vehicle, and during my inventory, I find a meth pipe, am I good to keep searching?" And now this is Arizona. And I was told by a sergeant, "Absolutely not. You got to stop it. You got to stop everything. You got to write a warrant." And I wasted a lot of time just simply because, like you said, these are supervisors that were never cops. And that was the situation I was in a first part of my career.
There is no shortage of stupidity in this profession.
And it's just flabbergasting to me that you can be a supervisor, and a lot of them are, unfortunately, and have no idea how the law works. It's very, very interesting. But, you know, one thing you said earlier, well, I'll start with this. I don't know how some of these cases didn't get thrown out. And it alludes to a point that I make a lot. I say, you know, we learn this job backwards. We just do.
Yes.
You go to an academy, you learn nothing. You get on the streets, you start learning the streets. And then you start learning about safety later on. Actually, you typically learn about case law next and then safety later on. So it looks like this. We graduate the academy. We want to be cops. Let's go out and do cop shit. And then like 2 years later, you're talking to a prosecutor and they're like, hey, you know, you're having suppression here. And you're like, for what? They're like, hey, you know, you can't do this. You can't frisk people anytime you want. And you're like, yeah, no, I watch Cops and Live PD. So I certainly can. Like, yeah, but do you understand what Terry v. Ohio is? And you're like, what is that? Like, you ever hear of a Terry stop or a Terry frisk? And you're like, I mean, I've heard that phrase before. What does that come from? Because nobody's told me. And then you realize that, oh my God, there is so much correlated in case law to the actions that I'm taking in the field. And let me preface this by saying a little bit of, this isn't done with malice. Cops don't know the law and then go out and try to violate the Fourth Amendment. They are not taught it. They're just trying to do the best that they can with what they have and what they've been given. So for the people who are non-law enforcement listening to this podcast, you have to understand something. That's why this podcast exists. That's why this training company exists. That's why Bauer Brown's training company exists. We recognize the deficiencies in this profession of where we're shortchanged, and we can't sit around and wait for these people to clean the mess up or fix it. Because guess what? They haven't and they won't. So what we do is we make better programs to teach cops how to do things properly. And we call these things out. So hopefully it puts enough pressure on command and administration and politicians to actually listen to us and make things better if that's what they want. But I think about that a lot, dude. I think about my job going out and later on getting educated with case law and then saying to myself, oh my God, if I would have just known this stuff, which could have been accomplished, how different those cases would have been, how more confident I would have been. And that's kind of where, when I started reading case law, I was like, oh shit, like we got to know this stuff. What's your thoughts on bridging the gap between case law and being proactive as a cop?
You said it, confidence right there. The confidence to be able to do things. When I started studying case law, it built confidence. And it's something you have to do as law enforcement. You can't rely on your agency to do it. 2015, Rodriguez came out. You remember this. Rodriguez comes out. I'm at this previous agency, and they come to us and they say, hey, we're done calling dogs. We can no longer call any dogs on traffic stops anymore. This is my agency telling me this. You can't do it. Rodriguez came out. And if you remember, like there were headlines all over the place that said, hey, police can no longer call for dogs. You still see it, you know, today. But if you actually read Rodriguez, that's not what it was saying. In fact, it was backing up what real interdictors had been doing for so long. And that was establishing reasonable suspicion during their traffic stop. So if you rely on your agency to teach you these things, and don't get me wrong, there's really good agencies out there, I'm sure, that make sure their officers know this stuff. But what I've seen in teaching across the nation in the last 2 years is that's not very common. So you have to take it upon yourself to study case law. That builds confidence in you. You know what you can do. You understand when you can detain somebody for a dog. You're understanding reasonable suspicion now. You understand what it takes to get there, and you're confident in detaining somebody. I did a recent podcast where I talked about the videos that are all over the internet where, you know, the viral YouTube videos of these First Amendment auditors, and they antagonize these cops. And a lot of times these guys will ask, am I detained? And it physically hurts me to see some of these cops not know the answer to that question. You got to know as a cop, you have to know, are they detained or are they not? Do you have reasonable suspicion? Where are you at? And it's on traffic stops. It's on everyday encounters. And if you don't know your case law, that is the predicament you're going to be in. And then obviously you're going to get, you know, cases thrown out of court. You don't know what you're doing out there. So it's important. You got to do it yourself. You got to study it yourself.
There are resources that you can buy. And I constantly, you know, promote this stuff in our groups. Criminal Procedure for Law Enforcement Professionals, a Blue 360 Media. It's a book written by Larry Holtz, and it's on basically case law. It's actually very easy to read. Now, I haven't read any other books. I like that book. I've had other people read it when they claim they don't know how to read case law. And a lot of the results back are, hey, this was very easy to read and I understand this. And now I get what we're doing, what we're not doing. But since we're on the topic, let's talk about detention. And maybe I can give people a little case law lesson here. And when somebody's lawfully detained, let's talk about two different scenarios. So lawful detention is discussed in a case called Terry v. Ohio. It's come out as 1968. And everybody who's listening to this podcast, who's in law enforcement, should Google and read Terry v. Ohio. But let's move on beyond Terry v. Ohio. When we talk about these First Amendment auditors, when they go up and they compel identification from somebody, I tell people there are two things you must accomplish or legally must be present for us to compel identification and say to somebody, you're not leaving, you're lawfully detained. I need to know who you are. And if you don't tell me who you are, I either work in a state that has a failure to identify statute, which I can employ and arrest you for it. Arizona is obviously one of them because one of the cases came out of Arizona. I'm sorry, it was actually Vegas, but I think Arizona is one as well. But also the next one is, if I don't have a statute like that, what I'm going to do is continue to detain you and contact a judge or a magistrate, which is the same thing, to explain what has occurred. And then they can give me an order to do something with you, like do a lawful investigative transport back to police headquarters to confirm and dispel your identity. And if you fail to comply with that judicial order via the telephone or however it's going to get done, you will find yourself in contempt of court. Now, with that being said, the way to get ourselves into a position to compel identification is to, first thing we need is reasonable suspicion that a crime has been committed or an offense. I don't want to say crime because people get confused on that. So motor vehicle violation or some kind of violation of law, misdemeanor or felony offense. If you don't have that at all, you can't move on to number two, which is number two is, do you have reasonable suspicion to believe that the person whom you have detained based on specific and articulable facts is the person who may have violated that law? So second criteria, just for an example or explanation, was given. Back to the first one, reasonable suspicion to believe that somebody or an offense has been committed, right? So I asked class this when I'm in class. What offense is committed when somebody takes their cell phone out and records cars leaving a parking lot or records the inside public area of a courtroom or blah, blah, blah? And they say none. I go, so we know that at this point we have lost our ability to continue to detain, number one, and number two, then compel for identification. Now, certainly you can do a consensual encounter, shake hands, say hello, and request identification. And if you receive somebody's identification, you certainly are lawfully in most states able to run a criminal history check. What I mean by that is a warrant check. And I go into like the law terms. That's what usually a lot of times that they call it, like a criminal background or some shit like that, but a warrant check. Now, just to help everybody understand one more thing before Bauer comments on this, Brundtland v. California came out in 2004. And essentially what they said in there is, because of safety issues, you don't need independent reasonable suspicion to detain passengers of vehicles. As long as the person is a passenger and the stop is lawful, even if the driver is the one who did it, that passenger is lawfully detained during that traffic stop. They don't get to walk away. They can't leave. By law, they must remain inside the vehicle. And if they do decide to leave, you're going to take action to impose a lawful command or demand. And how they respond to that will dictate what law is violated. So for example, if I tell Bauer on a traffic stop, he's the backseat passenger of a car that stopped, get back in the car and he complies, there's no violation of law. He complied with the lawful order. But if he gets out of the car and I yell, get back in the car, and he starts to run from the car, clearly this is going to violate some kind of statute in your state, whether it's obstruction by flight, interference, disorderly conduct. I don't know what it's, every state has a different statute that applies for something like this, but you could imagine it's no different than a driver getting out of a car on a lawful detention and running away. Also be aware that just because somebody's in a car and they're lawfully detained does not mean that they are required to provide identification for merely being a passenger who's lawfully detained. Again, in most states, you can ask that passenger for the identification and you can run background checks on them, aka warrant checks, and that's compliant with the Fourth Amendment. You'd have to check your state, but just so you guys know, a far majority of states fall in line with the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and those decisions given out by the Supreme Court of the United States. So I want to put that out there. So because I thought, you know what, why don't we just discuss this real quick?
Yeah.
So the guy who's listening, the girl's listening, says like, when's one of those times? Well, I just explained that to you. So
yep.
Your turn.
Yeah, we have a case in Arizona v. Johnson. That states Brindle, California, basically says, hey, passengers are detained on a traffic stop as well.
Well, and Arizona v. Johnson is a U.S. Supreme Court case. So it started in Arizona.
Yes.
It's a U.S. Supreme Court case. So that's and to allude to that, and you can comment on this. If Brindle wasn't true, Johnson would have been ruled differently. And some of the last lines in Johnson cite Brindle.
Correct. I guess I just brought it up because, you know, it did originate in my state, Arizona v. Johnson. So I like to show them, hey, like we agree here in this case. And if you think about it, I think it's Johnson, and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm no Zach Miller here or Dennis Bonino here, but they talk about basically like if you essentially find contraband within this vehicle, the passenger has a chance to fight it or suppress it as well. And that's one of the reasons why they're detained, because they have that chance to suppress it, or they will have that chance to suppress evidence found in there later.
The detention actually gives them the right to fight it if they are charged, yes, subsequently charged with it.
Correct.
And again, that's another conversation under Maryland v. Pringle about constructive possession. So the kind of jobs you have, dude, very, very simple to charge multiple occupants because you're finding significant shit. I think a lot of people find difficulty in situations where they find a bag of heroin, a small bag of heroin, user size amounts on the floor. And like, hey, can we charge everybody in the car? Nobody's claiming it. And the answer is no, you can't, because we have to meet some kind of criteria of culpable knowledge that the amount that you found, there is almost no way this person could not have been aware that this was inside the car. I mean, dude, when you were starting out, I can think of how many times that I found something in a car. 7 ecstasy pills, right? And people were like, I didn't know the fucking shit was in it. And like yelling at their co-passengers, like, why would you bring that shit in a fucking car, Tom? Fucking asshole, right?
Yeah,
I told you not to fucking bring shit like that into my car, right? And it's not like they weren't faking it, dude. These weren't gangbangers. These are just people who their friend had drugs, and when they get pulled over, they started stuffing it under a seat or some shit like that.
Yep. Yeah, happens a lot. A little bit easier when you're working, you know, highway interdiction, and you're finding the large amounts in there. And obviously through the process of, you know, roadside conversation and being able to tie people up in their stories, it's a lot easier to prove, hey, there's definitely a culpable mental state of knowingly at this point.
You know, you see highway interdiction, and I try to kind of remind people that nobody lives on the highway. So guys will say, oh, well, I don't work a highway. We don't have a highway. And I'll say, do you have access to a highway? There are roads that correlate to that highway and connect those highways. And say, yeah, I go, okay, listen, nobody brings drugs onto the highway and stays on the highway indefinitely. So they're getting off the highway. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, obviously, like look at, let's say Phoenix or Mesa, that area of Arizona. It's a big source city for us. We get a lot of powder. When I'm talking about powder, methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl coming out of that area. And before they're ever on the interstate, they're within the city streets all the time. Before they ever get to the stash house or leave the stash house, they're amongst your city streets. They also have to exit these interstates to get fuel. We work consensual encounters on a gas station in a rural area off of I-40. They got to get off this interstate and get gas, snacks, food eventually. We do consensual encounters there all the time. We also work a Highway 60, which is just a two lane that comes out of Phoenix, runs east, goes into New Mexico. And we work that every now and then when we can't get up to the I-40, and it's a good road to work. And we debriefed a lot of people that we've caught on this road and asked them, why aren't you on Interstate 40? And they'll tell us, oh, there's too many dogs on I-40. I'm not going on I-40. There's too many dogs. There's too many cops. And then below that, so there's I-40 up north, Highway 60 kind of in the middle, and then I-10 down low. And they avoid I-10, a lot of Border Patrol checkpoints. And so they like that Highway 60 to avoid these big interstates as well. So it's not just interstate, not just highway. You can find this stuff in your city streets for sure.
I think that you could even find it. People say, well, I work rural. Do you think the stuff is not in your rural areas? Maybe you could allude to that a little bit.
I work a rural area. I live in a town of, you know, 5,000 people. I've got 2 stoplights in my town. We don't even have a Walmart. We got a Safeway. Like it's a small town. And it driving right through us. And again, it's these smugglers that say, you know, I didn't want to take I-40. I didn't want to take I-10. And Highway 60 is not a real popular route as it is. We don't get a lot of tourist traffic or anything like that. It's just simply them trying to take a different route to avoid the police presence on some of these interstates.
I just try to extinguish people's excuses. And maybe they're not excuses, but maybe it's more of a revelation of like, oh, I didn't know that was here. I didn't know that was here. Because I think that's how we all go through our career. I mean, how many times that I've said, like, I didn't know I was going to find this on this road. You'd be surprised what you're going to find. We actually have one of our more significant proactive guys that I worked with who literally, I tell people, he would slow roll through neighborhoods and just hitting people in occupied cars. And, you know, if you're going to do some kind of interdiction like that, here's some important stuff to know. What's a consensual counter? What triggers a lawful investigative detention? Can you stop somebody's car and say license, registration, insurance when you're doing a consensual encounter? And the answer is no. But what if there's a parking violation? And people would like make fun of me because I had a ruler in my bag. And so if I had somebody that was in a car that I knew something was wrong, they started to exit, I'm like, yo, no. And like, what? I'm like, you're parked 10 inches from the curb, right? It's 6 in the state of New Jersey.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a violation of law. The car was parked here. Well, I was just pulling over. Okay. Or whatever it may be, dude. Hey, you're facing the wrong way on the wrong side of the street. And dude, there's so many interesting things in the parking law. Like if you park on a hill, you've got to turn your wheels a certain way in case the transmission goes. So the car just kind of rolls and does like a U. All this stuff's important to know because we're not terrorizing society. We're not going out and harassing old ladies who didn't know that. But what it does is it gives us a position to uphold the Constitution and not violate it by saying this person is engaged in criminal activity. They're not going to get to walk away because I don't know what I'm talking about or what I'm doing. And people are like, that stuff's crazy. It's actually not. It's actually how good police work is done. And people don't understand that.
Yeah. When we teach in any state, we spend a significant amount of time going through their traffic law. And it would surprise a lot of people, I think, when I go to these classes, I'll ask them, what's your statute or your code for speed? And you will watch the entire class rattle that code off like they've known it their entire career. If I ask them, you know, what's your code for following distance and how many car lengths or is it reasonable prudent? It's crickets. You know, what about turn signal? What's your turn signal violations? What about your obstruction of view statute? It's crickets. We use those and we're not harassing the public, like you said, by, you know, these minor or chicken shit, as people call them, violations, but you have to know that stuff. The 6-inch rule of the curb that you just brought up is genius, right? We have to know that. If that's the foundation of proactive policing, how else are you going to get in contact with these people other than consensual encounters? How else are you going to get in contact with these people and find out if criminal activity is afoot? You got to use these, small, I want to say small, but you know, like other people call them or bad admin, these chicken shit violations. If they're in the book, they're in the book. You got to use them.
People have to understand that we're also not writing tickets for these things. That's the sole purpose of why we're employing this. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. Chicken shit violations. You've heard that for 22 years. I'm in this industry. And that is a phrase from insecure people who have never found anything in their fucking lives, who try to like peacock and puff that like significant speeding violations are what's important. And the crazy thing is, we know that they're not. We can prove that they're not. And Bauer, I'm not bullshitting you. Every time somebody tries to like be a keyboard warrior on my Instagram page or whatever it may be, I invite them onto the podcast. Just did it this morning. And they run for the hills. Matter of fact, somebody just deleted their fucking post after being such a tough guy with me. I said, you should come on the podcast. And actually deleted their shit. So, you know, this is what people hide behind. If you want to use the phrase or the term chicken shit violations, we would love to have you on the podcast and you can explain your side of it and we'll explain our side of it and we'll show you what the truth is, because that's just it, dude. You can say everything you want when you have four people around you that will listen and actually, because they're just like you with their chicken shit idealisms, they will say, oh, yeah. They'll enable each other, right? They're enablers. Oh, co-sign to it. Yeah, that's right. You're right. Speed does kill. That's low-hanging fruit, boys and girls. That doesn't take any talent to go out and write speeders. And if you think it's having some significant impact in the reduction of crashes, and I know you're going to show up with your statistics from NHTSA and also the bullshit, the reality is I don't believe that that's going to be the actual science behind it. I would actually argue that proactive policing probably slows people down just in general. So why do we see people with 12, 15 points in their licenses if they didn't learn the lesson the first time?
Right.
But, you know, somebody unfortunately gets this run in with the police that they are not thrilled with because they got a ticket because overall they made a honestly, maybe they just made a little bit of a mistake. Maybe they're going a little fast. And these people take the opportunity to go like, well, here's your ticket. Seven over, 12 over. Like, are you fucking
right?
And that's the, you could be doing so much more with your time, but that requires commitment, energy, and effort and intelligence. And if you lack those, what you can do is find other people who also lack them and create little organizations called, you know, like we're a traffic safety. That's where I see the people who aren't, and I hate to say this, who just may not want to spend the time or have the intelligence to do this kind of work. Because, dude, there's one variable that rests between all the men and women out there who go out and are good police officers. And I'll say, not just in the interdiction realm. You watch the first 48, some of these really significant closers on these interviews, solving homicides, auto theft. I mean, everything. Even traffic safety. I will even give some kudos to some of the people who understand how to use traffic safety appropriately and not just a complete abuse. It's high level of intelligence. It's just a high level of intelligence. You, even the people who are in this game who know how to do some of this stuff, and I got to be honest with you, the guys and girls who are really good, the good practitioners are generally good dudes, but it's a high level of intelligence. Maybe not have the emotional quotient to go along with it, but people say, hey, how come these guys, like the instructors, what do you think the common denominator is? They're so smart, all of them, just so fucking smart. They just continue to figure things out, just quick problem solvers.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and go give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well.
I think that is a good trait that they have. And I have another trait that I've seen about these instructors is work ethic that differs from a lot of other people, man. I look at like Kaden Williams and Brad Gilmore, a lot of these guys that you have on your team. And man, like you can tell just by the way they talk, they teach, their backgrounds, the cases that they do, their work ethic is unlike any I've seen. And I see that amongst these proactive police officers is, yeah, they're good. Yeah, they have talent. But with that talent comes a lot of hard work and they want it. They get out there and day after day are trying to win this cat and mouse game over and over, because they crave it. And, that is a huge quality that I think is, overlooked. Oh man, he's just so good. I don't think I'll ever be that good. And, well, do you have the work ethic that he does? Like he probably puts 10 hours on the interstate. You showed up and made, you know, an appearance for 2 hours, you didn't get it, and now you're frustrated, and now you give up. I've seen that amongst a lot of these instructors. It's just a crazy desire and motivation that they have as well.
Earlier, you talked about bringing your lunch out and watching traffic because you don't want to miss anything. And people have to understand something. When you're trying to be successful at anything in life, like really the creme de la creme, to get to the top of your game, to not leave any talent unused, there's also this one key ingredient that a lot of people don't understand, and it's obsession. And often you'll see people, if you go on Facebook or whatever, who are obsessed with fishing. So if you want to take it out of the work sense, think about what you love to do. RC cars, RC planes, it's just stuff I see on Facebook and Instagram on the feeds now. Hunting. You'll have somebody who will sit in a tree stand for 10 hours waiting for the right buck and not hit anything, do that seven times over. But will not also employ the same discipline to go out and try to be successful as police officers. It's because you are not obsessed like these people are obsessed. And obsession isn't a bad thing. It actually is it's one of the main ingredients of what makes somebody so successful. So when you said taking your lunch out and sitting on the highway, eating lunch while you're watching traffic, my friend Brian did that. He's my first partner. We actually lived together. And bro, people would like literally really razz this dude because he'd show up to muster with like a lunch bag. We didn't have take home cars. We had to like take fleet cards out. Right. Yeah. And he would sit on the side of the roadway. Dude, come pull up on him. He wouldn't even take a lunch break. He wouldn't put in because like our CAD screen would go blue when you were on lunch. It would just put typically you're at a service for your hour lunch break. And dude, he'd be sitting out there, not even taking his hour and just watching traffic staying available because he loved it. and he wanted to become the best at it. And he was very good at seeing things. He didn't want to miss that. And that's kind of what separates the good from the great, is that obsession.
Yep. When I first started working with the sheriff's office with interdiction, I was put underneath a guy by the name of Al Clark. He's co-owner of the company, Ace Interdiction Tactics, with me as well. And he's been doing interdiction, I mean, full-time interdiction for over 28 years. Like, this guy lives, breathes. That's all he does is interdiction. And so when I go up there for the first day with the sheriff's office now, I'm working under Albert Clark. And we work all day and we never stop to eat lunch. And I'm like, man, I'm kind of hungry. Like, I didn't bring lunch. Like, are we going to stop? What are we going to do? And then the next day, same thing. I quickly learned, hey, I got to start bringing my lunch if I want to eat. The dude never took lunches either. And that's where I kind of learned from as well, is just his motivation and his drive to go arrest criminals. And then to this day, when we work and we work up there on the interstate, we never, ever take a lunch break because we're scared we're going to miss that one good car that we've been waiting for.
How many times have you decided not to take a lunch break and it was worth it?
Oh, several times. I mean, it's not even just a lunch break. There's been times where it's like, all right, I should probably go in, you know, I should probably call it a day and, I'm going to stay out. One time Al hits a load up on I-40. And, when I say load, this was a case that none of us really love, but we understand the importance of it. And he basically pulled over a car, ultimately finding a bunch of this identity theft equipment, you know, all the card readers, card scanners, embossers, several cards. It's not something that we love, but we understand the importance of investigating it and taking this investigation further. So typically when we hit, we don't have detectives to take over our stuff. So if we hit up there, if he hits or I hit, we call it a day for both of us. We take all of our evidence down and we help each other process the evidence and do all the background stuff. Well, he was telling me, hey, you don't got to come help me with this one. Just stay up there. And I felt really bad. And he said, hey, I'm going to go in and do this. You stay up there. I don't need your help. Just stay up there. And I felt bad not helping him. But also, of course, I wanted to stay up there on the interstate. And just by him saying, hey, stay up there, ended up hitting one of the best loads in my career by staying up there. If I would have went back and worked on this case with him, I would have missed it. And so just a bunch of things of just trying to stay up on the interstate as much as possible, obviously would increase your odds. The more time you have your line in the water, obviously it can increase your odds.
I always tell people, like, aggressive patience is important, tenacity, and you got to be able to roll with the punches, because some days it's going to be great, some days it's not. And I don't think anybody, even Kenny, who's probably one of the top five guys in the country, will even tell you, like, yeah, no, this week I go out and I won't hit a thing. But then sometimes he'll, like, message me and be like, yo, I'm having, like, one of the best weeks ever. And, like, yeah, I hit, like, five loads this week. It's been crazy. So one thing is just having that patience and understanding that if you keep staying with it, eventually the results will come. I had a friend of mine, and I think he's probably a mutual friend of ours, reached out to me yesterday and said, hey, man, I have a few questions for you. And if you have a minute, I would like to ask you some things. And I said, sure. So I said, all right, you know, now's the time, better time than never, because if I put this to the back burner, my life is just so interestingly fucking busy that a reveal is about a crossroads in my life where I'm trying to figure out how to manage my life now more than ever because of the explosive growth of this company and this podcast. So it's becoming very interesting for me. And I'm really trying to spend a lot of time almost in a sabbatical in my brain to figure out how the fuck I'm supposed to do all this stuff. And, you know, essentially taking a company from here and can I bring it to here and serve more people? But with that being said, it's very interesting to do. He says to me, well, blah, blah, blah. Do you think this is a good idea? I said, well, why are you asking me? And he said, well, you're the most successful guy I know. I said, well, you may think that I'm the most successful guy that you know, and that's fine, but I am not as successful as you think I am. And albeit I'm trying to become more successful, and it's the same principles of being successful on the road. But I said, he goes, well, you know, I'm just putting a lot of time and I put money into this thing and da, 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 and I haven't seen any results yet. And I said to him, well, how long have you been doing this? He said, 5 months. I said, dude, it's a business. 5 months. And there's in the business world where I spend a lot of my time. So just so everybody's clear, I don't have downtime. I have me time. So me time means going to the gym and working out, because I really like the way I look when I'm not fat. That's just me. I like looking built. I'm not trying to fight anybody. I just like the idea that somebody may look at me and go, that guy looks muscular. I appreciate those compliments. So for that, and the fact that, like, I'm also trying to live till I'm like 99, And I want to do everything I can based on the science and the stuff that I take in to ensure that I'll be mobile at 99. We just had Jeff Scholes on yesterday. He talked about his grandmother being 102 and he's taking her out for dinner that night. And she's going to meet him at the front door at her assisted living place. And she like walks, you have no idea she's 102. So I really am shooting for that goal. But what I said to him was, hey man, like street cop training has been around for 10 and a half years. People don't realize that. But in the business world, they talk about the bamboo plant. And I'm probably not going to get this right, but theoretically, most people listening to this should follow along. And essentially, it's when you get a bamboo seed, and again, I don't have these semantics down perfectly, just understand that there's a theory behind this. Anytime you go into a business video, you might catch this saying. So the person who takes the bamboo seed and plants it in the earth, the idea is you're supposed to water the seed, water the seed, water the seed. But the bamboo plant doesn't actually grow for like 2 or 3 years. But when it does start to grow, it shoots up to like 6 feet in like a week, which is the craziest shit in the world. Like it's this exponential growth. So, you know, I said, brother, you're complaining. I have made so many mistakes. I continue to make a ton of mistakes. I'm trying to avoid mistakes like the plague because, you know, now with 20 employees, 50 instructors, and the world has their eyes on me more and more every single day, I'm really trying to make steps that I'm not worried about everything, but that are the smartest steps I can make. But dude, I've gone to classes where I showed up and taught 8 people, 11 people back to back. Motherfuckers are like, oh, I got 38 people in my class. I'm like, bro, I taught 11 people how many times, you know? Like,
yeah.
What do you want me to tell you? So like, we all have been there. Don't look at the guy who's a little bit down the road than more down the road than you are. And my advice to him was, look, I can't be your constant mentor, but I can give you my mentors. Here's the podcasts that I listen to. Here's the ones that I think are super important. And if I was a business owner and I was obsessed, like I consider myself to be obsessed, so I take this education while I'm working out. That was the point I was making earlier. So you come to my house and work out. If you ever make your way to Jersey, dude, you're like, yo, can we hit the gym in your basement? It looks cool. I'm like, yeah, let's fucking go down. But we're going to be listening to audiobooks and podcasts and business ones at that. So my suggestion to him is also go online, go into your Google search engine and put in top 50 business books. These 50 business books, I've read almost all of them. I'm actually sad that I've missed some of them, but I've purchased them now. Knock those out. Listen to these 72 podcast episodes that I prescribed to you. Come back and see me in 6 months when you've got this done and tell me about your business then. So that's the only way we can actually progress our success forward is by constantly educating. Hence why your company exists. You can go out and spin your wheels all day, try to figure out what the fuck Bauer Brown sees on the highway, or Kenny or Brad or Rob Ferrero or Jeremy Bettingfield or Mike Vaccaro or Brian Konopka. But you could actually go to their class and pick their brain for 6 or 7 or 8 hours and essentially go back out with this whole education now of what you should be doing. I do the same thing. I just do it in business.
Yeah. I remember the first time I ever talked to you, you called me and, you know, I was running through my business with you and I'll never forget your words and don't,
I don't care.
I want to say it. Absolutely. You said, and there's a lot in there, but you said, man, this is like a bad episode of Shark Tank. And I'll never forget those words because I do. I watch Shark Tank a lot. And I was like, dude, he is right, man. And I could have took that two ways. I could have been like, who the heck, you know, who is Dennis? Forget him. I'm not going to implement anything he said. But I started to implement a lot of what you said on that phone call. And I know it was genuine because I took that advice and it really helped out my company. Now, there's still some things that I'm working on to build this thing. But you told me, man, it's like a bad episode of Shark Tank. And then you gave me advice. You gave me things to do, just like you did with, you know, the guy you're talking about right now, giving him advice. And I took that advice seriously. There's probably a point in time on the phone with you. I was like, man, this is harsh, but I like harsh criticism. I took it and was able to tweak some things, completely change some things. And it was very good for my business. So
yeah. And dude, guess what?
We get it.
I was handed out a little slice or a big slice of humble pie. Recently, I joined this mastermind group. And I'm not trying to brag. It's just that when I say to people, invest in yourself, it's a big number, folks. It's a big number that I'm paying to be part of this thing annually. I mean, it's bigger. If you'd probably fall over if I told you what the fucking price is, most people would say that's fucking insane. But again, I tell you, invest in yourself, come to these classes, learn this shit. But I'm doing the same exact thing. because I know it works. But anyway, when I got there, to me, a lot of it's peacocking in the beginning. I've been to these events before. But dude, what I actually found out was I was very financially different than most people here. I don't want to say that they're any more successful than me, because what I do and what they do and could be two very different things. Mine is very purpose-driven. I have a lot of results, although it may not be monetary results that come back into me, comparatively to the people here who were like 31 doing $500,000 a month, right? 43, which is 2 years older than me, doing $38 million a year in not even gross revenue, dude, like net to the neck. Motherfuckers are flying in their private jets to come do this event. And I'm like, God damn, but it was great for me to eat that. And when I sat down with them, dude, my questions were very infantile compared to where they're at. I'm like, how do I do this? And they're like, that's pretty fucking simple. Just do that. And that guy over there does that. Did it. And I'm like, yeah. It's just about how far along we are on the road and how we can help the people behind us a little bit. And I don't mean that in a degrading way. That's not what the intention is there. It's, I know where you are. I know some of the things that helped me get to where I'm at. I'm not even close to where I want to be, but I've already been down that road. Let me help save you some fucking tree branches to the face,
right,
and some fucking surprise bears coming out of the woods and chasing you a little bit, because that's a real thing. But I also want to say that I'm from New Jersey, right? And that's how we talk. Like when right. I'm bro-ing you up, that's how I am, bro. I'm very blunt. I'm very direct, but it comes from my heart. And I think people get confused. We had a girl call me yesterday. She wanted to host training in Wisconsin or something like that. They wanted like a 10% VIG on every fucking attendee. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. Some of our classes get 150, 200 people in them. You're talking about to rent a room for a day, $6,000. It doesn't make any sense. We have our hosts that exist there that we typically use rooms for free or pay a small fee. And a lot of times, I'm sure you found out that if you're going somewhere, the hosting agency, like the chief or the deputy chief or the captain, will have some kind of relationship with a venue, maybe a wedding venue or a hotel in town. And these places have really nice venues to teach in. And typically, we get a significant discount because we're the cops, because what people don't realize is they fucking like the cops. So if it's $3,000, they might throw it to us for $1,250. You know, shit like that. Or if we could say, hey, there's a few people flying in. If we get them to stay at your hotel and you offer a discount, 10 or 15 of those rooms sold, can you work on the price with us? Da-da-da. And we're like, yeah, sure. So it's so interesting. I had Mike Arena, who's one of our guys here, one of our bookers, on the phone. He was listening into what I was explaining to this woman. And dude, she got like fucking so offended. She's like, well, whatever. She's like, I guess you're here already, right? So what difference if you don't need us? And I'm like, I'm not trying to be a dick to you. I'm explaining to you why it doesn't make sense. I get why the people that do it, do it. She's working with a lot of people who have low enrollment, and I'm not making fun of them, but you know, if you're getting 18 people in a class, cutting 10% and using the room for 4 days, cutting 10% off of that's not a big deal. We're talking about $1,600 for a room, dude. Like, you know, you know, and she's like, well, one of our rooms holds 250 people. I'm like, every fucking room holds 250 people. Like, go to a fucking wedding venue. Every wedding venue holds 250 people, especially the way you set it up. You start removing tables. That's not like, why do you think you have the gold and I need to chisel at you? And I wasn't being a dick about it, but she was just getting very offended. And the reason is she's from Wisconsin. I'm from New Jersey. There's a disconnect and people get that confused. The crazy thing is, when people come to Jersey, they're like, you guys are the best. I'm like, I know. You don't think we are, but they're like, yeah, everybody's so fucking nice here. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And they think we're not because they watch a TV show and think everybody's an asshole. They're not. By the way, I'll be hanging out with some people from that TV show on fucking Friday, which is weird, but it's a fundraising event for kids, for a food bank for children. So the one thing I had a hard time doing when I first started this is convincing people that my intentions were genuine. I don't want a fucking thing back from Bauer Brown. Like, I don't, right? I don't care if you never tell a soul that I did something decent for you. I spent time with you. But like, I just want you to know that you have access to me anytime you want. And I'll never even ask you for anything in exchange. I don't expect anything. And that's just who I am genuinely in nature. And I think that's probably why most people find themselves attracted to this organization, because at the top, that's how we behave. It's never about what we can get. And I think it's refreshing in a world, and certainly, you know, an area of law enforcement where you will run into fuckheads who are running training companies, right? people are like, I can't make it to the conference because my pinky toe is getting surgery on 3 days before. And I'm like, yeah, no worries, man. Here's your money back. We'll see you next year. Mm-hmm. I don't need to trade in my laurels and my morals to essentially make a buck. Like, we're good, you know? And that guy will tell other people, like, we got to get six guys to go. This guy was so nice last year. But, you know, there's other companies that are like, too bad. It's a half price back. You already lost the money. Like, come on, man. Do you need the money that bad that you're going to fucking treat somebody like a piece of shit who may have something happen unbeknownst to them that they couldn't foresee? You know, we'll do something at the conference when you're there. We always do this every year, even though it's our second year. The people who are at the conference get the first crack at a private event at next year's conference. And we're almost actually locking down next year's conference. We have the location. We have the hotel. We're getting ready to execute a contract on it, which should be done by the end of the week this week, or if not early next week. So we'll have the new dates looking like April 29th through May 3rd, 2024. But what we do is we say, hey, the first however many people buy tickets will get access to this exclusive event. We don't ask for any more money. The event costs us a lot of money, but it kind of helps get the ball growing. And it's also a thank you to all the men and women who are there that, hey, because you're here, we appreciate it. Here's an opportunity for something to experience next year that'll be pretty fucking cool. Throughout the year, people are like, hey, I was one of the first couple hundred, or we might do 300 this year because it's getting so big. I was one of the first 200, first 300, first 250, whatever we're going to do, but I can't make it. Or can this guy take my place? Or my agency is going to pay for it now. Can I switch it out? Yeah. Like, whatever you guys want to do, man. Like, even if we lose 20, 30 people, like, we just had to refund a 10 banger for the conference, $6,000. You got to write a check out $6,000 back to the company, back to the police department. It wasn't even the guys. Like, hey, we got 10 guys. We can't make it this year. The town has cut travel, blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry. We love you guys. And I'm like, they're like, hey, we got to send $6,000 back. And like, dude, we're not millionaires here. I'm like, so send it back. I don't know what to tell you. Like,
right.
Send it the fuck back, dude. And that's good business practice.
Yeah, you can see it. I think that's a large part of your success is how good you are to people, right? I've been talking to one of your guys in reference the video for the conference, and he is so good. Yeah, I'm going to give him a shout out. His name's Kyle. Tell him he is just so good. In fact, he needs to tone it down a little bit. I started joking with him a little bit. I'm like, dude, I'm getting impatient, man. Like, I really want to see this video. I want to see your work. What the heck's going on? And he sends me this email, like, very structured, so apologetic. And I had to send him another email, like, dude, I'm just giving you shit, man. Just relax a little bit. And there, everybody that I've talked to at your company is very professional, and it sets an example for me. It's hard to be a business owner and run a business to change how sometimes I really want to be. I had a guy that never been to my class, never met him in person, not even in my state, decides that he wants to talk a lot of shit about ASIT. Never been to a class. I'm looking at all of my our roles and our records. I'm like, this guy's never even been to a class. So what I really want to do is be like, hey, you've been killing it out there. You want to get on the podcast? And then once you got on the podcast, I was just going to point blank him and be like, hey, why are you talking shit? That was what I really wanted to do. But instead I reached out to him and I said, hey man, you're doing really good out there. You've been killing it. If you ever want to come to my class, free tuition, man, it's on me. You don't got to pay anything. If there's a class in your area, please join. And lo and behold, not 6 months later, this dude's enrolled in a class in his area. And he comes to the class, after the class, leaves us one of the best reviews that we have ever had. So it was my first initial, what I wanted to do was just tear this guy apart, but I had to back up and be like, all right, let me just give him some compliments, let him come to the class. If he comes to the class, maybe this will change his mind. And it did. And to this day, he's one of our biggest supporters. And that wasn't easy for me, but sometimes you got to do that.
Dude, I'm telling you, a lot of this stuff isn't easy at all. You know, your knee-jerk reaction as a human being is to try to want to just eat somebody's fucking head off.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, there's a real superpower in not doing that. And sometimes if I feel like I'm getting off track of that, I return back to Anything by Seth Godin. I want to give people advice if you want to learn how to behave as a human being. Seth Godin is, I'm going to say right now in my life, my guru in the sense of, his podcast is akimbo. He's got, I think, 9 New York Times bestsellers. Yes, they call him the godfather of marketing, but there's a reason why he's the godfather of marketing is because his deep thought, not into the psychology for manipulation, but of how to behave so people understand who you are. It's so profound, dude. And anytime I find myself behaviorally getting off track, I just return to the Godin podcasts and just remember of, like, it just calms me down. It's almost like listening to meditation. I'm like, hey, stop worrying about this and do this. And if somebody does that, then don't do that back to them. Do this to them. And, like, you know, yeah, be their friend and da da da. That stuff's hard to do, man. It really is, because you really want to, fly off the handle because it's so untrue. But
yeah,
have you read the excerpt by Teddy Roosevelt called The Man in the Arena? You read that one before?
No.
So this is something that I it's the only thing we moved on in from our old office, moved across the hall around the corner here to a much bigger office, and we hung only one thing. I took 5 minutes to hang one picture frame thing at that time, and it's hung here for a year until about this past week when everybody started hanging shit the other day out of nowhere. And it's the only thing I hung because it's so important to me. And I actually used The Man in Arena in a rebuttal yesterday. And I don't engage with people, but I was being called out. And I said, you know, I'm doing my best every time I show up to this podcast. And you all have to understand something, that, like, it takes a lot of courage to show up and do the things that we're doing. So if you see it that way, you'll understand. But, like, I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm a human being. And people start to expect you to be flawless. I'm nowhere close to flawless. I'm a flawed sinner. And there's nothing I can fucking do about that except act with my heart. A lot of things I have to do are hard. But let me read this, and you'll like this. I think you should read this to when you get off, and maybe print it out and hang it up. You can go on, like, Etsy or, like, Amazon and buy this. This is a great one. And I think everybody who's in the business world who's successful lives by this. So it's called The Man in the Arena by Teddy Roosevelt. It says, it's not the critic who counts, not the man who points at how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, and who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error or shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions? Who spends himself in a worthy cause? Who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement? And who at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly? So that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Powerful shit, dude, especially when you're in the fucking arena. And bro, it's fucked up in the arena. Like, I can't emphasize it. Dude, being at the level I'm at, I'm like, yo, I can't imagine what motherfuckers like Gary Vaynerchuk and, like, Grant Cardone, I can't imagine how much fucked up shit they go through knowing all the fucked up shit I go through.
Yeah.
Let's do a speed round real quick. Three tips you can give people on how to do better interdiction shit, since we went off on a Bauer Brown, Dennis Bonino entrepreneurship conversation, and we'll do this again. So let's just do three quick tips, because I wanted to get this in. I have to urinate and I have to stop because I have a 1 o'clock and I'm starving. I've fasted since 6:30 last night and it's 1 p.m. today. So I'm now into, like, an 18-hour fast, and I worked out twice. So I'm going to fucking die if I don't eat immediately.
All right, let's get to it then. Let's three tips. Number one, learn how to interview, learn how to talk to people. Big issue I see with people that want to do interdiction is they'll make a traffic stop, and in the middle of their traffic stop, they have a hard time contemporaneously speaking with them and writing a warning, and it's hard for them to talk to people. You have to be able to talk to people at this game. One way to get better, talk to people everywhere. Talk to people as much as you can. If you're in line at a freaking fast food restaurant, engage somebody in conversation there. At the gas pumps, engage somebody in conversation there. You have to learn that skill in interdiction. If you struggle to ask questions, you struggle to create conversation, you're going to struggle to reach reasonable suspicion during your traffic stops. I really think that talking to people is a very, very important skill to have in interdiction. You got to learn it. I don't know how to teach that sometimes. A lot of that's just experience and getting out there and doing it. I'd say number two is don't be deceived by some of the tactics that these guys use. And I bring that up as in, I think a lot of times cops have a hard time stopping a vehicle and there's a 4-month-old in the back seat and a 3-year-old in the back seat. and that automatically turns that off, turns that traffic stop into a normal, hey, it's a warning. Hey, you know, they had a family. We got to get over that hump of, you know, oh, it's a family, you know, it can't be, they can't be smuggling. I had a case just 2 weeks ago, 41-year-old female passenger seat, her daughter, 21 years old, driver, 4 month old in the back. When I walked up, first thing you see is a 4 month old in a car seat right there in the back, and start talking to them. And immediately they want to bring up, hey, I got a 4 month old in the back, to really make sure that I noticed that. Bring the driver back and engage her in conversation while completing the warning, and pretty easily find out that there is some deception and some criminal activity involved relatively quickly. Very easy. Go up and talk to the mother. Same thing. Very quick, deceptive behavior. Find out their stories completely contradict each other. And within 10 minutes, reasonable suspicion. And they were loaded with about 60 pounds of methamphetamine and 7 pounds of fentanyl in the trunk, not concealed whatsoever. We do some background on this and find out that this isn't their first time. And one of the things that they were banking on is, hey, they see this 4 month old, you know, they're not going to look into searching this car. And we got to get over that as officers. And sometimes you got to ask the uncomfortable questions as well. So I would say tip number three, along with going out there and actually just getting your line in the water and doing this, tip number three would be learn your case law. We talked about this. Learn your traffic code.
Maybe I can help you out here a little bit. How about like not only be obsessed with learning your craft, but be obsessed with, or like in the field, but be obsessed with getting educated on your craft. I got motherfuckers who fly into Jersey from the West Coast because they are so eager to take this class in person. I had a girl just one of my classes, I think in Kenosha, Wisconsin. She drove 7 hours. And I was like, where are you from? And she said something. I'm like, how far is that? She's like, 7 hours. She's like, and I worked the afternoons last night and literally got my car and drove here to be here for class this morning. And I said, wow, there is nobody in this room who wants to be here more than you do. Yeah. And that told me everything I need to know about what her commitment was to becoming great.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. Learn your craft. That's a big one. And you got to do it on your own. Don't always rely on your agency. I say that all the time. I know you have people all the time paying out of their own pocket for classes. I have people pay out of their own pocket for my classes. And you can't always rely on your agency if you want to be great. You got to learn your craft and, you know, probably invest in yourself, like you said earlier.
I think we can do this again. We'll get the schedule. Make sure you fuck with Frankie. And dude, I'm going to tell you right now, if you guys have never seen Bauer perform, the best performance of his life is going to be in about 3 weeks at the conference.
Absolutely. And yeah. You better be like, they're going to watch me. They're going to be like, who's Dennis Bonino after I perform? Who's no doubt, Williams?
Bro. Yo, honestly, bro, listen, I'm going to tell you something right now. Craig Meyer does this class and it's on the website if you want to see it. When I saw it for the first time, knowing him, I've known him a long time. He came to one of my first classes. I was like, man, this shit is bonkers good. Like, it's fucking nuts. 3 weeks ago, a guy comes up to me and he's like, hey, man, I took effective policing tactics and techniques, whatever the fuck it's called. And sorry, Craig, I just forget the names of all these classes. We have 50, 70 fucking plus programs now. So he goes, yo, that class is amazing. He's like, it's better than yours. And he's like, but you know, yours is good. He's like, but it's better than yours. And I said, brother, like, that tickles me so deeply on the inside that his class is better than mine, because as I begin to dial back how much time I spend in the field, I'm so happy knowing that the person picking up the slack where I left off is even doing a better job than I did. Sure. And I'm so fucking sure. Proud that he chose us to be with and he stays with us. And I'm telling you, dude, it is probably the most practical class you can take that immediately changes literally everything you do, next to mine, right? I don't want to measure those in the sense of where do I start? What should I know? This class will fucking progress you so rapidly ahead. And it's not specialized, it's very general, but it's on top of having perspective shift like my class. It's also a perspective shift from his perspective of it. Sure. And there is some similarities, but it's completely different. It's so good. It's something I actually visioned for years. And dude, essentially it's a whole fucking day of his body worn camera footage, because the guy's a killer, but he's a well-rounded killer. He's not sitting on a highway. He's doing stuff that most people can relate to. So it's this sure. very unique proactive policing. And here are the things that I found. But yeah, dude, like, you will do great. And, you know, I'm glad that you're going to be there early start of the week so you can see what everybody else is doing and making sure your shit's up to par.
Absolutely. I'm excited. It'll be up to par. It will be there.
I know that, dude. Anyway, listen, thanks for being on. We'll do this again. I'll see you, bro. Take care.
All right. See ya.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.